Welcome to the Introvertpreneur Podcast. Take a breath because you are in the right place and you can finally stop apologizing for being an introvert. I'm Tara and I've discovered how to thrive as an entrepreneur while being 100% true to myself. Now I want to help you do the same. In these episodes, you're going to find everything you need to build a successful service-based business so you can stop competing with extroverts and grow and market your business with ease. Are you ready? Welcome back to another episode of the Introvertpreneur Podcast. I am so excited for today's special guest. We are joined by Laura Robinson, who is a marketing mentor for people who sell their expertise online as one-to-one services, courses, memberships, and group programs. And she helps them get comfortable with creating, selling, and marketing their offers so that they can enjoy a comfortable income. And I really resonate with that messaging because I've always said, like, I have no desire to be a multimillionaire doing this. I just want to make an impact and do what I love and have a, like you said, a comfortable income. So I'm so excited you are here. I feel like I've wanted to chat with you for so long, and I'm so excited that you are a guest on the podcast.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. So I would love for you to share a little bit more about you, just for anyone who hasn't met you before, just a little bit more about your story.
Okay. Well, I've been working online, making money online for about 15 years now, which that seems insane to me that it's been so long. I used to have a very boring corporate job working in communications and marketing in an insurance company. And that did not work out at all once my boys were born. So I set up my own business, and I feel like I have reinvented my business about three or four times over just to get it to match whatever we needed as a family and match my changing health needs, match my changing skill set. And currently it's done almost entirely based on Voxer and like Loom type video feedback. So I don't have to work real time with anybody. And so it makes it completely flexible around my life. I do pop up the occasional Zoom call to be able to do chats and podcast interviews, but I've just evolved my business so many times over just to create something that's really comfortable for me to run and very flexible so that it fits in around my life.
I know a lot of introverts listening are loving that because they definitely want to focus more on Voxer and those more like asynchronous ways of supporting people that don't require like set times.
I love it. And I feel like I come alive when I'm speaking on Voxer, and I can walk around my house and I'm not worried about like what my face is doing and trying to process what the person's saying while trying to think what I'm going to say at the same time. Just works so much better for my brain to be able to have a conversation, but also know I've got like that backup of being able to replay the messages if I need to listen to them again.
Yeah, I love Voxer so much. I have a question that I've always been curious because I feel like I've been in your world for so long and I love your business name. So I'm curious how you came up with Wordtitude as your business name.
It's just completely made up. My name is Laura Robinson, and there are just so many people with the same name. When I first Googled my name to see, like when I was first setting up the business, can I just use my name like so many other people do? There were just so many results, but also there were some that were like I wouldn't necessarily want associated with my name either. So I knew I needed to come up with a business name. I wanted to go into copywriting. So I wanted the website and the business name to be the same. I wanted to have something to do with like words, to do with writing. And I just played around for ages. Like it's words, it's personality, it's having attitude. And that's how I got to like Wordtitude. I was just sitting watching TV with my husband and I went, I've got it. Like I could see the name written, even in the style of writing. It's evolved slightly since then, but the style of writing that I used to use in the banner on my website just kind of appeared in my head. And I knew, okay, that's it. That's the name.
I love that. Those are the best ideas. The ones that just like come out of nowhere. They're like just those random sparks. But yeah, I've always been curious about that because I love that. I love that word. And I can resonate with that because I feel like a lot of introverts, I feel like, can probably resonate with your brand too, like having more authority and sharing more of your personality with your words.
I find it much easier to be like outgoing. I think people are quite surprised when they meet me. I'm still the same person, but I'm much more reserved in real life. I find like to speak and physically put myself out there in person is much harder than when I'm writing, because when I write, I can do it so many times over before anybody gets to see it. So I can write something, like write a blog post or write an email, and then I can feel myself go, no, more. Like I need to put more of me in it. I need to amplify this. And so I get to draft it again. And I can do it as many times as I need to before I feel like, yes, this really feels like me. And that's when I feel the most me. Like I feel most me when I've written something and I put it out there and people will reply to it, more so than when I'm having a conversation with someone.
I love that. Yeah, that's why I love written words so much. And even podcasts, I feel like even using my voice, like I know that I could re-record something if I wanted, if I was like, that wasn't very good, or I could have made that clearer, or I missed saying this important point. I think it just gives us that layer of like, it's not as instant as like being live.
I think we like process while we do it. That's the, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's an introvert thing or not, but I write it down and then I'm like, oh, I could say this so much better. Mm-hmm. And I'm the same, like if I record a voice message to someone and I listen to it back, I think, oh, I know if I said it again, I'd say it even better the next time. And I don't know how much I try and think about it inside my head until I'm actually trying to communicate it out loud or written down. The real processing and the real structuring the thoughts doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm the same way, especially like with Voxer. If I'm responding to an audio message, I will write little notes and then I'll record my response, because I'm like, I don't want to miss saying this. And I know once I start talking, I can like start rambling or go off on a tangent that I didn't mean to.
And then you dread like that. Oh no, are they actually listening to it while I sent it? Because halfway mm-hmm. through, you're like, well, no, just stop. I'm going to delete this and start over.
Let me finish before you start playing. Yes. So I definitely want to talk about launching a course or launching memberships. I know a lot of people, particularly in my Introvertpreneur Club, especially right now, I know I can like name almost 10 people I know of in that group that are launching a membership soon. So I'm curious to hear some of your top tips about, you know, deciding whether a course or a membership is right for you, because I know at least two of those people have since decided, okay, maybe a membership is not right for me, and they've pivoted to something else.
I've tried it all. I had. So originally, my first attempt at that kind of scalable income, hands-off income, which is absolutely not hands-off at all, I wrote a couple of courses. One was about how to write your about page and the other one was how to write your homepage. I wrote the courses. I had them all loaded onto like a course library. I had like this plugin set up on my website. I had the sales pages ready. I was ready to go. And before I like went to sell them, I did some quick maths and I figured out, oh, you know, about 20 people online, because my audience was tiny, and you're trying to sell these courses for £25 each. So you're not going to make a lot of money. And I realized quite like, this is not a strategy, it's not going to work. So I pressed pause on selling them as courses and I decided to launch a membership instead. Now, I don't know if that's probably not the right amount of thought that goes into running a membership. But my reasoning was if I could get 40 people through the door to join me and to pay, like I think it was £35 a month, that would be enough to kind of buy me some time to create the content every month. So instead of launching a course and then having to like have this bit of income and then I'm trying to market that course while I'm trying to build another course, I thought I will launch a membership, get some money coming in regularly, and then I'll build the material that's inside it. And I ran that membership for, I think it was about 5 years. I loved it. And then it just, my circumstances changed. And so then I turned it into a group program. And then my circumstances changed again. And then I turned them into standalone courses and added to them. And now I have a subscription model where the courses are all there and people can buy access to them for a year at a time. So it's more like you're borrowing the courses, which is way more affordable than like trying to buy them all. So I feel like in that I've tried every single model possible, I think. And I really love them all. And it doesn't make me think, no, don't do courses because that's too hard, or don't do a membership because that's too hard. It's about matching what that model is going to give you and what your audience needs to like your particular circumstances at the time. So there was a time when a membership was perfect for me and perfect for my audience, perfect for the content and the like, skill and expertise and the time I had available. And then that was great until it wasn't. And then it was time for a change. So it's hard to comment because it's so dependent on people's personal circumstances.
I love that. Yeah. And that's a really good example too of how, like, you know, if you do launch a course or a membership, like you're not locked into that. Like, you have the flexibility with your business to change things up. Like you did. I actually changed the Introvertpreneur Club from a membership after, I think it was 3 years. I was like, I feel like there's so much content in here now. I feel like I'm not able to, like, force myself to show up monthly and deliver this. Like, it just doesn't work for my life and schedule right now. So I switched it into a group program too. And that's going really well so far, but I can still change that later on too.
That's the beauty of, like, we own the material that we wrote, so we can package it up and sell it in whichever way, like, is a good match for us and our audience at that particular moment in time.
Yeah, I think sometimes we get stuck in that, you know, if I launch a membership, I'm like committing to this forever and that just doesn't feel good. So, you know, if you want to launch a membership and it works for you right now, as an example right here, it doesn't have to always be a membership.
You like what I love about a membership is people pay for the month. So if you've given them the thing they paid for that month, you're done. Like, that's, you don't owe them the next month. I know it's nice to keep it going at the same price and have the same things inside the membership, but you actually don't owe people that because they haven't paid or that future access yet. So it feels, I think sometimes a membership can feel quite heavy and like a long-term commitment and something that you're locked into. But actually, if you look at it from that perspective, they've paid for a month's access to this thing and now they've had it and we're done. Mm-hmm. Like, the next month is a clean slate. There's actually quite a bit of flexibility in that.
Yeah, I love that. And I feel the same way about memberships. Like, and even if, like, I know I had another membership that was a Canva templates membership, and I'm a really creative person, and I found after a couple years that when I had to deliver templates every single month, it kind of stunted my creativity, which is why I closed that membership as well. I'm like, I just want to be able to create when I feel inspired. I don't want to, like, have to force it.
I have, like, top tip for membership sales pages, because this comes up in conversations quite a lot. People put way too much on the sales page, and so they're making a promise of what's going to come. Just hold some of that back and just do it as a bonus. And then it's a really nice surprise for the members. So you want to have, like, a core element that's what you're promising inside the membership. If you have a ton of other ideas that you want to try out, great. Just keep it to yourself, because those are probably not going to be deal makers or breakers when someone's deciding whether to join or not. But once they get inside, it's a really lovely surprise. It's okay if it's not the same every single month. It's okay if you want to try other things out, and you might feel a bit more creative when you take that pressure off and you're not feeling like, I have to do this every single month. And then the minute you've created, you're like, oh no, I've got to start thinking about the one I'm going to create for next month too.
Yeah. It can definitely feel that way. That's a really good tip about the sales page. Cause I think we put all the promises, and then we're like, oh, now I'm like stuck. Like, I promise I have to do this. I have to show up and do all these things, because, like, it feels like you're now, like, chained to it. You're locked into that.
Yeah. And you don't have to, like, it probably wasn't necessary to get someone to join. You only need the sales page to work hard enough to get someone to join. And then the other side of that, you get to work all over again to get them to stay. But they're two different, like, levels of persuasion. They're two different, almost relationships, really, that you're having with someone who's considering joining versus someone who is now an active member.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm curious, like, what are some other options for, like, I know, I think you call it hands-free income.
Yeah. Because it's definitely not passive.
Yeah.
But it's more like it will make money when you're doing other things. A couple of years ago, I needed to stop doing my copywriting projects. And I really, because I had migraine and it was really difficult for me to commit to deadlines and to having long Zoom calls. And I spent a bit of time thinking about, okay, I can't possibly work. What am I going to do that makes, like, hands-free income where I don't need to be too involved? And luckily, I'd already had a whole heap of experience selling courses, group programs, and a membership before that. So I already knew at that point, hands-free income doesn't really exist, not in the form where I can just, like, press an email, lie down, some money will come and I'll never have to do any other work. I think the nearest I've ever got to that is affiliate marketing. Before I had this business, I had a number of blogs and I made money through affiliate marketing, which I loved because people would give me money and I didn't have to do anything. The other side of the payment, like my work was already done, but it was very erratic and like not at all stable and quite stressful. So I knew a course, a membership or a group program is not actually going to give me this like hands-free lifestyle that I need. So instead, I just packaged up a one-to-one offer that was as hands-free as I could make it. And that's what I sell now. So it's not hands-free. It's definitely hands-on, but it's completely on my terms with interacting in a way that I'm comfortable with and doesn't actually require many hours of my time, because I can have like a powerful 10-minute Voxer interaction with someone that gives them like some momentum or helps them make a decision or get them unstuck from something. And then they're like, they're off and they're going to go off and do like 3 days work because of the conversation that we had. But my work here is done like inside the 10 minutes conversation. So when people are thinking, how can I make hands-free income? Like, do I need a course, membership or group program? What I really actively encourage them to do, especially my clients, is first, can you look at a way to make your one-to-one service like way more hands-off than it is right now? So it's not totally hands-free, but it's got a lot more flexibility and a lot less time and energy input from you.
I love that. Yeah, I know everyone listening is like listening very intently right now, because I know like that sounds so powerful for introverts. They're like, they're probably like drooling over the idea of doing something that is more hands-free. And I think like for me, especially too, like I love having flexibility. Like I don't like working set hours. I'm like, I love to work some most Saturdays just because it's quieter. I can really focus. And that doesn't necessarily work with like clients and deadlines and every like timed calls. Like I'm definitely trying to limit the number of calls that I'm doing. I don't want a packed calendar because I know it stunts my productivity and it's hard to do that right now.
As soon as I see an appointment in the calendar, it's like, oh, like, do I have to? I don't know why. There's just this like a resistance to it. And it suddenly feels like work. But actually then you like do the call or have the chat and it's really wonderful. But I definitely appreciate the opportunity to interact with people more when it's rare. Like I will only have four or five appointments each week that are set times where I have to show up. And then the rest of it, I have a Voxer office hours day once a week for my clients. And even that feels so much easier because most of the time I will reply to them as soon as they message me. But I really love that I don't have to. Like the expectation is there that I might take 10 minutes or half an hour or a couple of hours if I'm tied up doing something else. And just having that flexibility and freedom, it makes me feel so much more likely to want to engage and to enjoy it. I think I have, it's still like a hangover from being overscheduled from like going to school and having a job and having to wake up and be somewhere every single day. And in my corporate job, I'd be in back-to-back meetings all day. And then you'd come out at 5 and then they'd expect you to start work because you've got to do the work that you should have been doing while you were in the meetings. So I think there's some sort of hangover from that where as soon as I see lots of meetings, I start to like feel stress and resistance to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a very heavy meeting week last week. I think every single day I had at least 3 Monday through Friday last week. And it really, really impacted me.
Yeah, it's not nice when you're going into it like, I just don't want to. Please don't make me. Have to work for a living? This is so annoying.
I know. Well, I had one. One was a later, because I do have one day on my calendar where I have like evening calls because I'm definitely not a morning person. So I do have one day per week where people in different time zones, if they need to book like a later in the day call. And so I had one booked last week and they actually rescheduled it like a couple hours before. And I was like, yay, because I'm exhausted right now. I'll be a lot better and able to show up this week when it was rescheduled for, because yeah, last week it just got, sometimes it can get a little heavy.
Yeah, I hear. And it doesn't matter how many times I set up my calendar settings so that it doesn't book a certain number. I've never, ever managed to get that set up properly. Like the time, or people will say, I looked in your calendar and there's no appointments. And you think, I just checked the settings that this should be fine. How have I still got this wrong? So Yeah, I would expect my automated calendar to save me from overscheduling, but it's on me. I just don't know how to set it up properly.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've tried a few different things. I use Tidycal right now to schedule pretty much all meetings. And the only option is like you can limit a certain number per day. Like you can have the buffer in between, which I have all that set up, but the limiting the number per day, it's by the type. So if I did like two, that means that there could be two podcast interviews, there could be two one-on-one coaching calls, there could be two strategy sessions all in the same day because it's spread out by type of call.
I can't think, like my brain likes to batch days. So if I was, I'd have like a day where I was having this type of call and then a day where I was doing this type of work. I find it really hard if I have to like mix and match what I'm going to be doing during the day. I like themed days very much.
Yeah, I did change that for that's why for podcast interviews now, I think it's just Thursdays that I blocked out. Because I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way to make it better. But oh yeah, that was a good conversation. I know a lot of people are struggling with like time management, and the introverts listening are like wanting to limit calls and manage their energy better when it comes to like timed events. So yeah, this was off topic, but a good conversation.
Yes, I think it's I feel like I don't want to do it, like when I see a lot of appointments, but like the conversation we've just had where you see, well, what can I control and can I theme the days or can I have a bigger buffer or can I restrict the number, it makes it so much like easier to commit to doing them. So we can get like, if I've had a lot of calls, I can get into this pattern of thinking of I don't like doing calls. Like I label the whole thing, like goes in this big bucket of I don't like it, I don't want to do it. But actually if I really consider it and reflect on a particular call, I think actually I really enjoyed that. So why have I put that in the bucket of I don't want to do this? And so it's like getting in and figuring out, okay, what can I possibly control about this to make it more comfortable for me and more enjoyable for me? Not I actually hate this type of work, because I don't. I just need to adjust it and adapt it so that it suits me and my schedule and my energy levels.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I don't think I've like in the last year for sure have not had a call or a meeting that I didn't enjoy, that didn't go well, that I did need to like recharge afterwards as an introvert, but it wasn't something that should be dreaded. Like it was actually a really good connection, really good experience. It's just limiting it based on your capacity and like setting those rules or those buffers on the amount of calls.
Definitely.
So I'm curious about, I know you have a lot of really awesome offers and freebies, and I definitely have a lot. I just logged into your platform today to be like, how much do I have? And I was like, I have a lot of really awesome stuff from you. And I don't think there's ever been anything that I've purchased or gotten access to that has not been amazing from you. So I'm curious, because you have so many things, like I feel like a lot of people listening are also in the multi-passionate kind of way. So when it comes to like creating new things or new offers, like how do you like manage coming up with something new or maybe like tweaking something that already exists?
I don't have a plan of I want to create these certain things by this certain time. I have loads of different folders in Notion. I use Notion as like my second brain, it's the database tool. And when I have an idea of this might be a course or it might be something I want to teach later, I open a like Notion page or a Notion folder and I just dump whatever comes to mind. It usually starts with an interaction where someone says, have you got something that would help me do this? Or like a question, or can I elaborate on something else that's in another training? So I will wait usually for the idea to come to me via someone who needs it, because I know like that's a defined need, and then I'll answer their question, and then I'll copy and paste their question and my answer into this folder labeled this course will be about this thing. Like it doesn't have a snappy name or anything, it's got a big description, and it can take like a year, maybe longer, where I just, every time I have an idea or I answer a question that relates to that thing, I just dump it in the folder until eventually the folder looks so big, I think, okay, this is time now. It needs to be turned into a course or it needs to be turned into a short training. And I'll move all the things around in Notion until it's got some kind of flow to it. And then sometimes I just record notes that are inside Notion, and sometimes I make slides, and there's no rhyme or reason to when that happens. It's just I can picture in my head how I want to communicate the thing and how much it's going to depend on what's on the screen versus me talking out loud. So I'll create like either the Notion notes that are presentable for other people to see rather than just these like dumped scribbles that I've been accumulating for a couple of years, or I'll create my presentation slides and I just record the video. And it takes me no time at all to create a training right up until that point where I've recorded the video, and then it just takes forever to like download it, edit it, create like the sales page, all the bits like hook the email and the checkout and everything else up together. But the actual creating the course bit feels effortless because it's been done in slow motion over such a long period of time that I didn't really notice that I'm doing it.
I love that. Instead of rushing it, it's like a slow process. And speaking of names, have you ever offered this might come to something that you drop in Notion, but have you ever offered kind of like a one-to-one offer where you help people name things? Because the names of your products and offers are so incredible. I always love how the names that you come up with.
Thank you. I have done it like a couple of times. People have hired me either to do names, or usually names and a tagline, because honestly, the tagline needs to do the heavy lifting. Like the name can be a fun couple of words, but then the tagline has to tell you what the thing is. I have done it where people could hire me for like an hour or so to knock the names about. I have a blog post that's all about it, and there's a lesson inside one of my courses. I really should do a standalone training. The thing is with trying to name it in like an hour in a session with somebody is that to me, that's not how the names come about. Like if you set this time frame of I'm going to come up with the name with you in the next hour, it feels such hard work with so much like friction there, because as soon as you get into this deadline pressure, then your brain is just like, nope, can't be creative at all. So when I'm naming something for either myself or my clients, it's kind of like how I came up with my business name. I think of a bunch of words that I want the name to convey. So it starts off really big. And actually, something else I've started doing for myself and with my clients is sometimes pictures work better than words. So if I can't think what are the words that I want the name to convey, okay, well, what are some pictures that look like the feeling I want the name to give, or that get me in the right kind of mood to be naming this thing? Like just whatever you can grasp hold of and put in front of you, and just like I'll put it up on the wall, have a whole wall of these pictures or these words or post-it notes with words. And I know that if I set myself a future deadline of like by the end of next week, the name will make itself known to me. So I'm not trying to chase down a name by a particular point in time. I know that the name already exists. I just don't know what it is yet. And I'm fairly confident that if I give it 5 days, I'll know what it is. And I'll start, you know, some names will come to mind and I'll start writing them down. And I like to physically move things around in space as well. So if I start falling out of love with names or words, they move down one end of the wall and the ones that I love more get like grouped up the other end. And it happens over time. And I don't know if I could accelerate that. Maybe I could accelerate it as a process that can be done like in a one-to-one conversation, or I could do it as like a week-long offer, couldn't I? Like a Vox a week of we're going to name your thing. Mm-hmm. It would be quite good fun.
Yeah, because every name, like every time I see an offer of yours, I'm like, that is brilliant. That is so clever, like smooth sailing with like the sailboat icon for writing your sales page and like making it, having the copy written in a smooth way so that you can get more sales. What was the other one that I really, really loved? I was like sales sleuth, like 9 investigations to help you figure out why your thing isn't selling. I was like, that is so like clever. I love it because it's not just the name. It's like you the create tagline. the whole identity, like the icon, the like.
The tagline had to come first for that one, I think. It took me a while to think of like, what's the description of what this is that's not just boring, like 9 questions or so. If that's just starting out, like write the boring thing and then okay, well, how can I add more emotion to this, or how can I make it more exciting? And I just helped one of my clients to create a tagline for a book, and I found a Google document that had, it must have had about 30 maybe more taglines, and if you looked at them, they were almost exactly the same. All I was doing was changing one word from the other, almost like those puzzles, you know, when you see they change one letter and it gives you a new word. This was changing one word and it gives you a slightly different feeling to the tagline. And I just kept going until about halfway through. The tagline there didn't look anything like the one above, but it all kind of meant the same thing. And then we were like, ah, that's it. That one's got the right feeling. This one at the end, that's got the right ending word, but that one feels right in the middle. And then eventually you create it. But it's, the tagline was like the 51st iteration by the time we found the one we wanted.
That is awesome to hear the process, because yeah, I've always felt that way about your offers. I was like, it's just so clever, like the tagline, the names, the like icon branding, like it's just, it's brilliant. Like I always struggle with, like I have a course called Easy SEO mini course. I have a workshop called the Content Repurposing Workshop. Like there's no kind of cleverness to
how painful it is. But that's not just simple SEO, because at least that alliterates.
Yeah.
Like, cause at a bare minimum, try and grasp the alliteration, because that makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So I want to, any tips for somebody who, I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to the answer to this question. Like if somebody has launched a new course recently or launched a membership and it's not really going as well as they had hoped, what are some things that they could maybe think about?
Oh, that's a great question. Because the first thing that people do is either they say, oh, this offer is hopeless, like nobody wants to buy it, I'm a terrible person and I've created something that nobody ever wants. Or they decide it's entirely the sales page's fault, and like the sales page is terrible, this thing's not selling. And actually it's like 20 different things it could possibly be. Like there's so many different moving parts to it. That's why Sales Sleuth is called like 9 investigations, because you do need to have this kind of curious mindset. So instead of looking like, where's the blame, or what have I done wrong, or like that negative, this is a disaster and what's caused this, you need to get into a more like curious state of mind. Like, oh, okay, well, let me figure out what's going on here and what things could I possibly change and tweak and try and see what happens. And so if you can get into this kind of experimental frame of mind, that's going to be a lot easier to begin with. I do suggest starting with a sales page, because it's the easiest thing to tweak. The sales page, the most common mistakes I see is at the beginning, it's not clear what the thing is. So many people teach sales pages where you write this really clever, catchy, like the name, and then a clever, catchy tagline. And you don't find out until you're like 750 words in that this thing's a membership or a group program. And the problem is it makes it so hard for the reader to, first of all, stay invested, because once they've been reading for a little while, they're like, I still don't even know what this is. I can't be bothered to read anymore. But it also means they don't have anything to hang the words on. So if you're telling them how it's going to solve a problem or what's included, they don't have a vision of, but what is this thing? Like when I'm explaining it to clients, I use the example of a pizza. Like if you described all of the ingredients of a pizza and how it's going to make you feel and when you're going to want to eat it, that would seem really weird if you hadn't told someone first that it's a pizza. But if you begin with name of the pizza, this is a pizza, and then explain it, the person reading can picture it in their head and they can imagine it in their life and they can see it on their plate and they can taste it in their mouth, and then they're going to want to buy it. So with your sales page, begin. Yes, you can have your name and your clever, catchy tagline, but I always begin with a very brief statement of like, this is a 60-minute training for these people. It's a 60-minute video training for these people who have this problem, or for these people who want this outcome. And then the rest of the sales page makes a lot more sense for them. And then the other like really common mistake on sales pages I see, especially for services or group programs, is asking people to do something they don't want to do. So asking them to buy when it's a high commitment price and they're like, I'm not going to buy just off of reading this page. Like I need to get to know you better. I need a discovery call. Or even asking people to book calls, because that is still quite a jump in commitment. If you don't know someone and you know they're trying to sell you this thing and it's like $1,000 or $2,000, like booking a call with them is quite intimidating. And if you're an introvert, you're probably attracting other introverts who do not want to talk on a call. So, so many times I'll be called in to help someone with their sales page and then they'll have book a call on there. And I'll say, how many times has someone booked a call? Never. Okay, right. Well, then we need to change the call to action. Like that's the easiest thing to change. So I suggest swapping out massive sales pages with book a call, swapping that out for a short page where you just ask people to download a brochure. Because then when they download the brochure, you know that they've done that. You can email them, which is much more casual than asking to book on a call with them. And you can have a little bit of email chat back and forth. And then you can offer for them to book a call. So those are the two, like, if you're struggling to sell something, that's where I'd begin with. Is the top of your sales page very clear about what it's about? And is the bottom of your sales page asking for something that is as friction-free as it possibly can be for the person who's just read the sales page?
I love that. Yeah. One example is this kind of like what you were talking about, like for service providers. Like, I've seen a lot on their services page where at the bottom, it's like, instead of book a call, it's like, enter your name and email to get our like pricing guide or package guide. Cause I always sign up for that. But if it was just book a call, I'm like, no, cause I don't want to waste your time. I don't want an energy. Like, I don't want to waste mine. Like, I need more information first.
Like, if you went into a really high, like a luxury furniture store, the difference between being able to walk in and pick up a brochure and walk out again versus someone coming up to you and saying, can I help you today? And you're like, no, I've got leave. I need to get out of here immediately.
That's so true.
Do we want to make it as like soft and comfortable for them as possible? I am super aware that I just said everybody blames the sales page and that there's loads of other things it can be. And then I told you the ways in which to change your sales page. So I should also, in the sales page's defense, say that another thing that's quite common is nobody's seen the sales page. So people will ask me like, what's wrong with my sales page? I've only sold three of this thing. And I'll ask, okay, how many people have seen the sales page? And they'll look in their like email provider and say 10 people clicks on the sales page. I'm like, well, then you have a very amazing sales page.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty darn good.
So you do need to dig into the numbers a bit and see if you're asking your sales page to work too hard, or like maybe you need to just be getting it in front of more people.
I love that. Yeah, that's why I really love that you're sales sleuth. I think it's so clever, first of all, but so helpful too for trying to figure out what's going on in your business. And I also love that you do the, like for that sales sleuth, it's borrow for free or it's seven, is that euros? I always get that.
That's pounds.
Pounds. to buy for keeps. I love that.
That's the only offer I have, the only like course that I sell like that, just because I get asked so often, like, please, can you help me? This thing's not converting. And it's just not worth people's while to hire me for like a one-off consult if they haven't already like had this list of nine investigations that they can do themselves. So I wanted everyone to have access to it. But then I was like, oh, but it really is like a course. I'd already broken it down like as a course. It's like, oh, it really is a course. I thought, okay, well, people can borrow the video. It's like a complete chunk. They want to watch it and then just go off and fix it themselves for free. They've got, I think, it's 7 days to go and do that. But if it's something where they want it broken down into a course and it's on like the podcast feed so they can like listen on their phone and they want to come back to it over and over again, that seemed fair to ask people to pay £7 for it. It's the only one that I've done like that. Everything else I felt really confident about charging for, and this one I felt confident about charging for, but I felt a bit sad in my heart that like so many people needed it. Let's just let them borrow it for a little while.
Yeah, I love that. That kind of goes into like you know, caring about your audience. Like, you know how valuable and helpful this is. So yeah, I love that. I love that strategy. Like, it's so clever.
It just has the broadest appeal as well. Like, it's the one. You know, I would almost tell everyone, start here. It almost doesn't matter what your problem is. Just watch this and then come back to me, and your time with me or with all the other courses will be so much better invested if you've got like this foundational background by watching the sales sleuth training first.
I love that. Yeah, it's like kind of like having them qualify themselves for other offers. Yeah, that's. I feel like I use the word clever when I talk about your business and you so often, but you really are so clever. I love like everything you do. I love your emails.
It feels so unearned. Like, so much of it is just, well, it's just an idea, and I just like did it to see what happens. And I think the things that were not clever, so the things that were like spontaneous and turned out to be rubbish, people don't really see them because they just forget about them. So the things that remain look clever, but honestly, there's been an at least like equal amount of things where I've just tried it out and gone, no, that didn't work at all, and just moved on from it.
I love that you did that too, because it just shows like the experimentation side of business and like being open to trying different things and seeing what works. Or even like, I know a lot of people get stuck in like perfectionism when it comes to a course or a membership, and like, it's hard to get out of that. But I do think it's important to remind yourself that like, there are no rules. Like, I love how you talked about curiosity. I think that is such a powerful business tool to have.
I think I've been like recovering from that perfectionism for so long. Like I was such a good girl at school. Like I was the good girl who was going to study and get the highest grades and believe like if you just do all these things, then you're going to get this great outcome. And then I went to work and I kind of fell for that as well and realized like I did all the things they wanted me to do. It just ended up making me really ill and burn out and I had to leave my job. So I was less inclined to follow that. Like by the time I started my own business, I was like, do you know what? I've done the whole be a good girl thing and do everything that people tell me and assume it's going to get this great outcome. And I'm not really sure that I believe in it. So I don't think I had as long. I still did it. I still, when I, you know, I was first online, I still watched how other people were successful and thought if I just do the same moves and I make, you know, I am visible in the same spaces and I sell the same kind of thing, that's going to work. But I think I was already I'd already had that shift inside of me of like, no, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to play around and figure out how to do it for myself. Sometimes I feel like that's my, like also a form of self-sabotage. Like if only I would just follow the rules and do everything the way everybody else does, I would have untold riches by now and be hugely successful. But it's just not in my nature to do that. I want to be curious and experiment and mess around with things. And I think it's fun to try new things and then be able to report back to people who are interested and say, oh yeah, I tried that and here's how it worked out for me, and like help them adapt it for their business. So even if there was a rule book, if you followed it and you would be guaranteed success, I don't think I'd have the discipline to follow it anyway.
Yeah, it almost sounds like the curiosity and like how you decided to shift things with your business and like not be so, what's the word, like set on the rules or like doing what everyone else says. It's almost like that mindset kind of leans into like, you're a thought leader, like you're doing things different and stepping outside of the normal, like, here's what you have to do, here's the rule. Like, so I think that can be really powerful. And I do think of you as a thought leader, by the way, like all of your content and everything you do, I just find it so, so different and not like, which is so refreshing.
I think like literally all I'm saying is, instead of building a business around this like imaginary ideal client that you don't even know whether they exist or not, just like build it around yourself. Like we aren't a massive brand where we have to appeal to loads of people. We're just us. Our business is us. We need enough income for whatever we need. So I just make my business like revolve around me and encourage people to do the same. It's not a recipe for having a scalable business that you can sell to somebody else in the future. It's a recipe for a comfortable business that fits in with your life. And it's just like having a business that's kind of a bit selfish and putting yourself first.
I love this so much. This has been such a good conversation. And we will have all of your links in the show notes. So everyone, definitely go connect with Laura. She has so many amazing offers and free stuff. So we'll have a link to your things to buy, free stuff, one-to-one, if anyone wants to work with you one-on-one and get your cleverness in their back pocket.
You should definitely put a link to Sales Sleuth after we've bigged it up that much.
Yes, you'll definitely want to grab that. And then also your Comfy Business newsletter. Like I mentioned your emails once, like your emails are really, really good. Yours are ones that I always open. So definitely get on Laura's email list too.
That newsletter is like my hobby. I love writing that newsletter. I love like things happen in my life and I think, oh, I can use that on Tuesday when I write the newsletter.
I love that. Yeah, it feels very like friendly and like casual. Like it's not like salesy. Like it is comfy, like a business chat. And I love that.
I want like for people to read it and then just feel a little bit better afterwards, just a little bit, just like, oh, that was fun, or I enjoyed that, or there was something to appreciate about it. It's like a little micro moment of training or like or encouragement inside your inbox every week. And I love writing it. And then I love it when I get replies. That's like seeing the replies come in after I've sent the email. That is my favorite part of the week.
Yeah, that's always the best. I need to get better about replying to other people because I know how much it means to me when people reply. And I'm not great at like I'll save an email. I'll be like, this was fascinating. I want to go back to it. Like I'll put it in a special folder and I never reply. And yeah, I'm going to start doing that more.
We don't like you definitely need to, because they come in at like just the right moment as well. So it'll be just after like my 18-year-old has sighed at me heavily for taking clean laundry to him, and I'm thinking, oh, hey, why do I even bother? This is really hard. And then there'll be someone in my inbox saying, oh, I loved your email. And I think, yeah, see, somebody appreciates me.
Yeah, it's the best thing. Yeah, that's a good point for anyone listening. Like if you ever get an email and it resonates, it's helpful, like we all love replies, and I'm sure you do too in your business. So yeah, we should start replying to more of those emails.
It's like the fear that your inbox is so heavy, like, oh no, I don't want to clutter up the inbox, but just like there's definitely different categories of email. Like emails that are replying to my newsletter, they are top of the pile and so much more welcome in my inbox than like companies trying to sell me something where I think I'd unsubscribed from them 3 times already.
Yeah. Yeah, those ones are immediately archived usually. Well, thank you so much. This was so awesome. And everyone listening, definitely go connect with Laura. She is absolutely brilliant. And I love everything that I have access to that you've ever created. And I don't think you can go wrong with any of your resources or offers.
Thank you. I might snippet that and use it in all my marketing now.
Yeah, go for it. Thank you so much for joining me today. This episode may have ended, but there are ways we can stay in touch until next time. You can join me at thetarotread.com, where you can find tons of blog posts and resources that will also help you grow your business. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at introvertcoach, where I share more introvert-friendly and service-based business tips with you. If you love what you're hearing, drop a 5-star rating and review telling me what you are loving about the podcast so that I can continue to encourage as many introverted entrepreneurs as possible. Until next time, keep using your introvert superpowers.